I'm Dennis Owsley. Welcome to the second hour of the Jazz History of St. Louis on Jazz Unlimited. We heard, ending the first hour, an interview with Miles Davis and Harry Frost, a little bit of it. And one of the things about Miles Davis's being in town was that he used John Mixon. John used to go over to Miles Davis's father's farm in Millstadt, Illinois. And there was a little lake in the backyard, and they would just get in a rowboat and sit there. Miles taught John how to form chords and some other music theory in these floating little discussions on music. And one of the things is that there was a drummer on Night Train and also on Our Delight by the name of Oscar Oldham. He was a very promising young player. Mixon rated Oldham at the time as being in the same league as Max Roach and people like that. In 1953, Mixon was working with a quartet that included Oldham, Peanuts Whalum, and John Albino Red Chapman, who was a pianist. And they were all coming home from a gig with John because he was the only one who had a car. After leaving Chapman off, the other three were hit broadside at the corner of Euclid and Highland. Oldham was killed, and Peanuts had one arm and hand so badly damaged he was in the hospital for 35 days. Peanuts Whalum was born in Wilberforce, Ohio, and was a member of the Wilberforce Collegians Orchestra. He came to St. Louis in the summer of 1949 and began working in clubs. His group at the time was Peanuts Whalum and his Three Nuts. Peanuts worked with the Lionel Hampton Band in the early 1950s, and in St. Louis, he worked with John Mixon, George Hudson, John Cotter, and others. He plays piano and sung in many venues with a Nat Cole-styled voice. And his nephew, Kirk Whalum, recorded him in 2006, and we will hear that recording when we get to 2006. Pianist Herb Drury and bassist Jerry Cherry began their long-term musical partnership when Cherry subbed for a bass player at French Village in East St. Louis. Herb was the pianist on the gig. Later, they added a drummer, first at comedian Davey Bowles Celebrity Club on Del Mar, and later at Sorrento's, at DeBolivar and Waterman. The drummers were either Phil Halsey or Art Heagle. There was a TV personality in town here for many years by the name of Jim Boland, who played Vibes, and he played sometimes with them. And Jerry Cherry and Herb Drury both played together mainly as a duo up until Jerry's death in 2000. And here's Herb Drury talking about Jim Boland started playing with them.
Well, Jim's been with us almost as long as the trio's existed. It's sort of an interesting thing how we got together. Davey Bold, a comedian who is no longer with us, he had a club here, and it was called Davey Bold Celebrity Club. It was on Delmar and Skinker. We worked as a trio for him for a year, and of course during that year met a lot of quote celebrities, unquote, you know, local ones, a lot of the TV personalities, which of course Jim Boland was. So anyway, he came in one night and he brought his Vibes to sit in, and it turned out that he left his Vibes there because Davey Bull liked to play around on it too. Davey was a pianist, pretty good. He played very adequate for his dirty songs, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Cute guy, really was great, very funny man. I laughed every night at him. But anyway, Jim Boland used to come out and sit in with us there. And when we left Davey Bull's, we took a job at a little place called Sorrento's, which was on DeBolivar and Waterman, and Al Baker owned that place then. And we played three nights a week there, and it was Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And on Thursday night, we had guest night, and we'd hire a soloist, like. And we had several different players on alternate Thursday nights, or, you know, and it finally settled down to Jim Boland because we seemed to play together the best with him, you know. So Jim sort of became the fourth member there. Occasionally, and it's been like that ever since. Every place we've played, well, not every place, but several places that we played, he's been with us at least one night a week.
Herb Drury was the major jazz piano teacher in St. Louis during the 1960s and clear up until the 90s. He taught at the University of Missouri-St. Louis and also privately. Jerry Cherry was a bass repairman until his death. Herb and the trio recorded two albums during the Gaslight Square period, and they will be played when we get to Gaslight Square. Other albums as a duo with Jerry Cherry are going to be played when we bring the St. Louis jazz history up to date. You're listening to Jazz Unlimited, and this is the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 4. I'm Dennis Owsley. Davy Bold's Celebrity Club was the place that the Jazz Central Group got started. Here is Lee Hyde telling about how the band was formed and how they got sponsorship from KMOX.
Well, we didn't necessarily dislike that type of music, but the group thought it was that type of music was a bit primitive. And we wanted something a little closer to what we were all digging at that time, which was the Dave Pell cool sound out of Los Angeles. He had an octet similar to ours. He used four horns instead of five, and he used a guitar, which we didn't use. But but we liked that sound. We got a hold of a couple of their arrangements, and we had to have musicians that had a jazz feel and could hopefully solo, but it eliminated some of the musicians that we really would like to have had in there, in that they had to be able to read very well too. And as you know, there are some good musicians everywhere, and you know, like Earl Garner nationally, yeah, and musicians yeah. here that don't read music, so we could not use those. But I wrote some arrangements, Harry Stone wrote some arrangements, and we got together and we thought, instead of just having, as they say, a kicks band, why not organize? So we had dues, and we bought some stands and frantically wrote arrangements and got some sports coats and decided the first thing that we should do would be to have a concert. And we put on a concert at the old Ambassador Kingsway Hotel, which is now gone. It was across from the Chase. And the room was filled up. We were so surprised that that many people were there that someone there that worked for Bob Hyland on a KMOX heard about the concert and how it was received and was able to convince him that if we could find a place to play on Saturday afternoons and one day a week would play a school concert, he would put the Saturday concert, at least a half an hour of it, on the air. And we started right off the bat, and we stayed at the Kingsway for 6 months, and we eventually played at what was the Rose and Crown Room at Meat Arts, which is Cheshire Inn now. We played at a place that had been on South Kings Highway called the Embers. We broadcast from there for 6 months, and we wound up our final 6 months on the air from the Forest Park Islands outside bandstand. And we had people as Ollie Raymond and Jack Buck narrated our. Over a two-year period, we did some 50 concerts, and that was sponsored jointly by KMOX and the American Federation of Musicians. We put the album out, and the album made just enough money to enable us to open this jazz club on the corner of Delmar and Skinker. It's a service station now. But it had been Davy Bowles' comedy room, and we took over the last year. We did fairly well for a while, but St. Louis will only tolerate so much jazz to spread around their music dollar. And 1 week we'd have Dizzy Gillespie in there, and maybe the next week an Al Hurt or Nancy Wilson, Dukes of Dixieland, Cannonball Adderley. We had some very fine groups in there. But you just could not. People just couldn't come out every night, every week, and so the club went down the tubes.
That was Lee Hyde talking about the Jazz Central Group, and the school concerts used KMOX personalities like Jack Buck as announcers. Eventually, Jazz Central acquired a club in 1959 in the building that had been the Celebrity Club, and they called their club Jazz Central, of course. And they brought in such national names as Al Hurt, Cannonball Adderley, Dizzy Gillespie, Carmen McRae, Ramsey Lewis, and the Dukes of Dixieland. Herb Drury also worked in a trio format at the Jazz Central Club. Jazz Central also recorded an album called Natural Habitat in 1959, and the liner notes said it was an alternative to Straw Hat Dixieland. Here's the Jazz Central theme song, Centralization.
And also, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Thank you.
I'm Dennis Owsley, and you're listening to the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 4, on Jazz Unlimited. And we heard Jazz Central doing
Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? And also
Centralization with Lee Hyde on trumpet, Freddie Delgadio on alto, Dale Billings on tenor, Don McGrady trombone, Bobby Swain baritone, Herb Drury piano, Ralph DeRoos or Boris Anastasov bass, and Harry Stone or Bud Murphy on drums. Although we know him today as a pianist, Dave Venn played tenor with the group later on. Dave was born in St. Louis, and he began taking piano lessons at age 7 and played saxophone and clarinet in high school. Dave attended the St. Louis Institute of Music, and while he was there, played tenor sax with Jazz Central. It was obvious by then that there was much more work for a piano player than a tenor player, and Dave began his long St. Louis career on Gaslight Square. He accompanied Clea Bradford at the Trebian Club. He's been in high demand for clubs and concerts, and often accompanies nationally known musicians. We'll play one of his recordings later in the documentary. The Bolivar Strip ran right into Gaslight Square days. One of the groups that worked nearly constantly was Sammy Gardner and his Mound City Six. And here they are with Windermere Blues and Sweet Georgia Brown, recorded in 1958. Thank you. You're listening to Jazz Unlimited, and this is the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 4. I'm Dennis Owsley, and that was Muggsy Sprecher on cornet, Jimmy Haislip on trombone, Sammy Gardner on clarinet, and on some tracks did vocalizing on that album, Bob Dorner on piano, Wally Eckert bass, and Chuck Cree, who was kind of a wild man, on drums. Eddie Johnson, who we heard about in the 30s and 40s, returned from New York and got a job at the Roma Room in 1951 and worked at the Hurricane Lounge on Compton and Lawton and over at the Harlem Club in Brooklyn, Illinois for long engagements. And he worked clubs with Tab Smith and others in St. Louis. He and Leroy Harris Jr. had the longest running gig in St. Louis at the King Brothers Motel. That was at Clayton and Lindbergh. The gig ran for 11 years. In addition, Eddie Johnson founded ELG Records and made recordings of some St. Louis musicians. The Midtown Hotel at Lawton, which is now under the athletic fields of St. Louis University, had a club initially named the Glass Bar in 1944, and in 1955 was refurbished and called Peacock Alley. The club featured local musicians like Tommy Dean and Jimmy Forrest in the 1940s. Peanuts Whalen worked at the Glass Bar in 1950, and the owners of the Glass Bar then began bringing in national jazz groups. In May 1951, Stan Getz came, and Getz was so popular that he returned to the Glass Bar two more times in 1951. All of the major names in jazz played the Glass Bar, including James Moody, Dizzy Gillespie, Gene Ammons, Sonny Stitt, Lester Young, Charlie Parker, and Bud Powell. The modern jazz engagements alternated with engagements with local and nationally known rhythm and blues groups. Walter Dixon worked in that club as a bouncer and valet. And of course, it featured many well-known national names. Charlie Parker worked at the club with Jimmy Forrest Band backing him in 1953. And Dixon remembers some problems that they had with Charlie Parker at that engagement, and also with Bud Powell at a later 1953 engagement.
But Charlie Parker came into St. Louis. He didn't have no group. He just came himself. Jimmy Forrest was the club band. Well, okay, he's going to play with the club band. So everybody was there to hear the great Charlie Parker. Now, all these nights when these people were showing up, well, see, my greatest remuneration came off of tips. Now, Charlie comes in town. Now, that was when he was right in the midst, the deepest part of his drug habit. People were playing at that time, which was $2, which is a song and a dance now. Somebody paying to hear a good, great jazz artist. And he was just coming in there, grabbing his horn and holding it. And Jimmy Forrest was blowing. So people called me and said, "Hey, Walter," I said, "what's the story with Charlie Parker?" You know, everybody coming in there every night to hear Charlie blow. This Saturday matinee, somebody called me and said, "Walter," I said, "what?" He said, "come upstairs." I said, "what do you mean come upstairs?" I said, "man," said, "Charlie Parker is laying out there, drunk." I went up that day, he was all sprawled out there on the lounge. I was larger then than I am now, so I picked his up, throwed him over my shoulder, and had one of my friends open up the door, and he had his clothes on. I throwed that up under that shower, clothes and all, turned that cold water on it. Oh, he started hollering and screaming, "Get me out of here, get me out of here, I said, "you gonna play?" He said, "yeah, I'm gonna play. Get me out of here, get me out of here." I said, "you sure you gonna play? Get me out of here." So that cold water snapped him out of it. I said, "now these people been coming here every night to spending this money every night to come in here, you blow." I said, "and you haven't been blowing a damn thing." I said, "look, we don't have to pay a dime to hear Jimmy Forrest. You can go to any damn tavern, a lounge in town, and hear Jimmy Forrest blow for nothing. All you got to do is go in there and buy a beer or something. Charlie Parker got up there. He got up there and started blowing, and he knocked everybody out. People were just squealing and hollering. And what made Jimmy Forrest mad? Charlie picked up the damn tenor and started blowing. Next thing anybody knew, Jimmy Forrest had picked up his horn, packed it in his bag, walked off the damn bandstand, right out the door. Nobody seen him no more. He didn't come back anymore. Bud came down there. He wasn't on nothing then. He was just nuts. He just got out of the joint for his nerves. He walked in and he had one of them little spinet piano. He said, "What the hell is that?" He said, "I don't play that kind of shit." Boom! Spit on it. He said, "If you don't get something else," he said, "you can just forget it." He said, "I'm going back to New York." He said, "Well, you won't get paid to me." He said, "I wouldn't give a damn." He said, "I'm not playing that." So the following night, he walks in there and there was a big baby grand, brand new, sitting there for him.
I'm Dennis Owsley, and this is the Jazz History of St. Louis. We heard Walter Dixon talking about Charlie Parker and Bud Powell in St. Louis in 1953. And in 1955, the Glass Bar was renovated and renamed Peacock Alley, as we said. And the first great Miles Davis quintet came into the club in October of that year. That group had John Coltrane on tenor, Red Garland on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and Philly Joe Jones on drums. And there was a group of musicians outside the club when they came into town, but what they looked like shocked them. According to drummer McClinton Rayford, the rest of the group looked like bums. Miles was clean, but the rest of them were all heroin users and looked like they had slept in their clothes for days. One of them had vomited on himself and didn't clean his clothes up, and they all smelled badly. The group came back with Miles in July of 1956. And Spider Burks was the MC, and here is Walkin' from recordings made by Spider Burks, who was on KXLW at the time, and we can hear Spider's voice talking to Miles.
Miles Davis and the Quintet, ladies and gentlemen, right from Peacock Alley on a Saturday afternoon, has an old Dizzy Gillespie favorite called Woodying You. Walkin' by Miles Davis and the Quintet. Thank you.
I'm Dennis Owsley. Thanks for being with me tonight on the Jazz History of St. Louis Part 4 on Jazz Unlimited. That was Walkin' from the Peacock Alley Club in 1956 with Miles on trumpet, Coltrane on tenor, Red Garland on piano, Paul Chambers bass, and Philly Joe Jones on drums. Walkin' was the 1954 recording that Miles made that made people really aware of the style, which was called hard bop. The rhythm section of this group was so tight and strong that musicians tried to emulate how it played. And just, if you were a soloist, it must have been like being driven in a Cadillac. Eddie Randall's pianist in 1941 was Tommy Dean. And he came to St. Louis from Louisiana and is the composer of Scammon Boogie, which is the St. Louis Blue Devils theme. After he left Randall, he began working around St. Louis and apparently took his own band around the Midwest, and he reached Chicago in 1945. His band was known in Chicago as Tommy Dean and his St. Louisans, and we heard his St. Louis recordings under that name in late 1947 last week. Dean worked at the Glass Bar. He was a favorite there and other venues from 1946 on, and was quite popular in St. Louis. He worked in both Chicago and St. Louis for the rest of his life, but began turning further into rhythm and blues by the middle of the 1950s. And he made St. Louis his home. He died very suddenly in 1965. Chris Woods was a saxophonist with Dean, who recorded in 1947 and in the early 50s with him. He recorded for the United label in 1953, The album was called Somebody Done Stole My Blues, was not released on the Delmark label until 1977. The title tune was written by Chris Woods, but Sonny Stitt stole it and recorded it as Loose Walk after hearing Woods play it at the Glass Bar. During this time, quite a few St. Louis musicians moved between St. Louis and Chicago, going where the work would take them. Ollie and Virgil Matthews booked the Dean Band, Jimmy Forrest, and Chris Woods for dances for white teenagers in South St. Louis. Interesting attempts at integration there in St. Louis. And here is Somebody Done Stole My Blues, recorded in 1953. Woods on alto, Pete Redford on trombone, Gene Wright on baritone, Charles Fox on piano, Gene Thomas bass, and Pee Wee Jernigan on drums with Somebody's Done Stole My Blues in 1953. I'm Dennis Owsley, and this is the Jazz History of St. Louis on Jazz Unlimited. Multi-reed player composer Chris Woods was born in Memphis, and after playing his first professional jobs there, he moved to St. Louis. He worked with Jeter Pillars and George Hudson and also Tommy Dean, recording for the United label and worked around St. Louis. He worked around St. Louis, leading various combos after he left Tommy Dean. He actually got very discouraged by audiences wanting to hear rock and roll and quit music for 9 months and got a job as a bus driver. He got back into music in 1955 and kept his day job until 1961, and he left then from New York. And Chris Woods played and toured and recorded with Carla Bley, Dizzy Gillespie, Clark Terry, Ernie Wilkins, Cy Oliver, and others during the 1960s and 70s. He made a number of recordings in Paris in the mid-70s and was with the Count Basie Orchestra in 1983 and remained with the band until his death from cancer in 1985. We're going to hear Clark Terry remembering Chris Woods and his artistry as the Jazz History of St. Louis Part 4 continues on Jazz Unlimited.
He was one of the most beautiful people that I've ever met and one of the most underrated musicians that I've ever known. And I think that I'm happier playing with him on my side than with almost anybody that I know in the business. Because he was supportive, he was competent, and he was articulate, and he was just a marvelous, marvelous person. He could do anything. Yeah, he could do anything. And when you see Chris Woods, man, you said it all for me.
You're listening to Jazz Unlimited, and this is the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 4. I'm Dennis Owsley. That was Clark Terry remembering Chris Woods and his artistry. There was a photographer named Bernie Thrasher here in town, and he actually provided images of the groups that worked in Peacock Alley during the 1950s. I've seen these photographs, and they included Chet Baker, Max Roach Quintet, Chico Hamilton Quintet, J.J. Johnson Quintet, Carmen McRae, and Sonny Stitt. There was a St. Louis tenor player by the name of Bob Graff, who we've discussed before. He was also photographed and recorded at the Glass Bar in 1958, but they've not been issued on compact disc. They were recorded by Del Mar. There was a recording made in January of 1958 at Westminster College in Fulton with very similar personnel. And here is Funky Ride with the Bob Graff Group in 1958. Oh, I'm Dennis Owsley, and you're listening to the Jazz History of St. Louis Part 4 on Jazz Unlimited. We heard Funky Ride with the Bob Graff Group in 1958. There were two tenors there, Bob Graff and Ron Ruff. Jimmy Williams was the pianist, Bob Mizell bass, and Al St. James was on drums. Bob Graff was born and raised in St. Louis, good friend of Clark Terry, and one of the things that Clark did was get him into the Basie Small Group that played at the Brass Rail in Chicago in 1950. He never recorded with Basie, and Wardell Gray soon replaced him, and Graff moved on to Woody Herman's band and recorded with him in 1950 and 51. He then moved to L.A. and was heard on some of Chet Baker's recordings for Pacific Jazz, and then he returned to St. Louis, and we heard him at Westminster College, and he was also recorded with a vocalist by the name of Bev Kelly in the basement of a church in the Soulard District in St. Louis in 1959. Unfortunately, I don't have any of those recordings. Later in the 1960s, he played with the Jerry Mulligan Concert Band, but he didn't record, and he was an instrument repairman and continued to play around St. Louis until his death in 1981. Grant Green was born in St. Louis. He's a great guitarist. Both his father and uncle played guitar, and he was something of a child prodigy. His father bought him his first instruments. Walter Dixon remembered Grant Green as a child.
Well, Grant and I were born in the same block that we were raised up in. Well, he was a gifted, really gifted musician, because when he was a little bitty boy, small boy, his father had a little toy guitar he bought him. And he could get the damnest songs out of that toy guitar. So his father bought him a ukulele. Then he bought him a tipple. And in the summertime, you know, people didn't have no air conditioning. There wasn't no such thing as damn air conditioning. Everybody be sitting out on the front. And people would be sitting out on the front at night. And he'd take that damn tipple, and you could hear it all over them two blocks. And people would say, listen to that boy play. And the kid was just out of sight. He closed his eyes, and he'd make some runs, man, on that damn thing you never heard of.
I'm Dennis Owsley, and you're listening to Jazz Unlimited's Jazz History of St. Louis. This is part four. Grant Green's influences were guitarist Charlie Christian, as you might imagine, and saxophonist Charlie Parker. He learned Parker's solos note for note. At 13, Grant began playing professionally, first in church and later with local rhythm and blues and jazz combos led by such musicians as accordionist Joe Murphy, drum legend Joe Charles, whom we will hear later in this documentary, Sweets Edison, organist Sam Lazar, and Jimmy Forrest. Green played in strip clubs, country and western clubs, blues clubs, and occasionally in jazz clubs, and he was beginning to make a name for himself at the Sportsman in East St. Louis. Chuck Tillman, saxophonist who just passed recently, was something of a mentor to Grant Green, and he said that his concept was that of a horn player, and a lot of the stuff that Grant played were basically not guitar licks. Grant recorded two albums for Delmark with Jimmy Forrest and Elvin Jones in 1950 and Spaceflight with Sam Lazar in 1960. He was discovered by Lou Donaldson at an East St. Louis club in 1960, and he invited him to audition for Blue Note Records in New York. Before he left for St. Louis, Grant Green was working on a strip club with Sam Lazar. They moved to a short-lived club on DeBolivar Strip called the Holy Barbarian, and it was a kind of a hippie place. According to Ollie Matthews, the club owner, we had Grant and Chauncey Williams on drums, Sam Lazar on organ, and Bobby Graff on tenor. Bobby was the white boy. It was the first interracial club in the city, and both the musicians' unions gave me a lot of crap over that. But it was the happiest place. The police were always stopping customers and checking them for drugs, doing warrantless searches on cars and other things. And they closed the Holy Barbarian down after 8 weeks on a charge of employing a minor they apparently sent in as a waitress in an entrapment scheme. At least Virgil Matthews thought that. But there was a recording made of those guys, and it had just surfaced toward the end of last year. And here is Karamu from the Grant Green recording at the Holy Barbarian in 1959. Bob Graff was on tenor, Sam Lazar on organ, Grant Green guitar, and Chauncey Williams on drums.
And we'll hear that one to start the third hour after the station break.